Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. The Yoga of Self-Perfection, Part 4, Purification, Intelligence and Will, Chapter 7, page 663. To purify the buddhi, we must first understand its rather complex composition. And first, we have to make clear the distinction, ignored in ordinary speech, between the manas, mind, and buddhi, the discerning intelligence and the enlightened will. Manas is the sense mind. Man's initial mentality is not at all a thing of reason and will. It is an animal, physical, or sense mentality, which constitutes its whole experience from the impressions made on it by the external world and by its own embodied consciousness, which responds to the outward stimulus of this kind of experience. The buddhi only comes in as a secondary power, which has in the evolution taken the first place, but is still dependent on the inferior instrument it uses. It depends for its workings on the sense mind, and does what it can on its own higher range by a difficult, elaborate, and rather stumbling extension of knowledge and action from the physical or sense basis. A half-enlightened physical or sense mentality is the ordinary type of the mind of man. In fact, the manas is a development from the external citta. It is the first organizing of the crude stuff of the consciousness excited and aroused by external contacts. Bahya sparsya. What we are physically is a soul asleep in matter, which has evolved to the partial wakefulness of a living body pervaded by a crude stuff of external consciousness, more or less alive and attentive to the outward impacts of the external world in which we are developing our conscious being. In the animal, this stuff of externalized consciousness organizes itself into a well-regulated mental sense or organ of perceiving and acting mind. Sense is, in fact, the mental contact of the embodied consciousness with its surroundings. This contact is always essentially a mental phenomenon. But in fact, it depends chiefly upon the development of certain physical organs of contact with objects and with their properties, to whose images it is able, by habit, to give their mental values. What we call the physical senses have a double element: the physical nervous impression of the object, and the mental nervous value we give to it. And the two together make up our seeing, hearing, smell, taste, touch, with all those varieties of sensation of which they, and the touch chiefly, are the starting point, or first transmitting agency. But the manas is able to receive sense impressions and draw results from them by a direct transmission not dependent on the physical organ. This is more distinct in the lower creation. Man, though he has really a greater capacity for this direct sense, the sixth sense in the mind, has let it fall into abeyance by an exclusive reliance on the physical senses, supplemented by the activity of the buddhi. The manas is, therefore, in the first place, an organizer of sense experience. In addition, it organizes the natural reactions of the will in the embodied consciousness and uses the body as an instrument, uses, as it is ordinarily put, the organs of action. This natural action, too, has a double element: a physico-nervous impulse, and behind it, a mental nervous power value of instinctive will impulse. That makes up the nexus of first perceptions and actions, which is common to all developing animal life. But in addition, there is in the manas, or sense mind, a first resulting thought element, which accompanies the operations of animal life. Just as the living body has a certain pervading and possessing action of consciousness, citta, which forms into this sense mind, so the sense mind has in it a certain pervading and possessing power which mentally uses the sense data, turns them into perceptions and first ideas, associates experience with other experiences, and in some way or other thinks and feels and wills on the sense basis. This sensational thought mind, which is based upon sense, memory, association, first ideas, and resultant generalizations or secondary ideas, is common to all developed animal life and mentality. Man indeed has given it an immense development and range and complexity impossible to the animal, but still, if he stopped there, he would only be a more highly effective animal. He gets beyond the animal range and height because he's been able to disengage and separate, to a greater or less extent, his thought action from the sense of mentality, to draw back from the latter and observe its data, and to act on it from above by a separated and partially freed intelligence. The intelligence and will of the animal are involved in the sense mind and therefore altogether governed by it and carried on its stream of sensations, sense perceptions, impulses. It is instinctive. Man is able to use a reason and will, a self-observing, thinking, and all-observing, an intelligently willing mind, which is no longer involved in the sense mind, but acts from above and behind it in its own right, with a certain separateness and freedom. He is reflective, has a certain relative freedom of intelligent will. He is liberated in himself and has formed into a separate power of the buddhi. But what is this buddhi? From the point of view of yogic knowledge, we may say that it is that instrument of the soul, of the inner consciousness being in nature, of the purusha, by which it comes into some kind of conscious and ordered possession both of itself and its surroundings. Behind all the action of the citta and manas, there is this soul, this purusha. But in the lower forms of life, it is mostly subconscient, asleep, or half awake, absorbed in the mechanical action of nature. But it becomes more and more awake and comes more and more forward as it rises in the scale of life. By the activity of the buddhi, it begins the process of an entire awakening. In the lower actions of the mind, the soul suffers nature rather than possesses her, for it is there entirely a slave to the mechanism which has brought it into conscious embodied experience. But in the buddhi, we get to something, still a natural instrumentation, by which yet nature seems to be helping and arming the purusha to understand, possess, and master her. Neither understanding, possession, nor mastery is complete either, because the buddhi in us is itself still incomplete, only yet half developed and half formed, or because it is in its nature only an intermediary instrument. And before we can get complete knowledge and mastery, we must rise to something greater than the buddhi. Still, it is a movement by which we come to the knowledge that there is a power within us greater than the animal life, a truth greater than the first truths or appearances perceived by the sense mind, and can try to get at that truth and to labor towards a greater and more successful power of action and control, a more effective government both of our own nature and the nature of things around us. A higher knowledge, a higher power, a higher and larger enjoyment, a more exalted range of being. What, then, is the final object of this trend? Evidently, it must be for the Purusha to get to the highest and fullest truth of itself and of things, greatest truth of soul or self, and greatest truth of nature, and to an action and a status of being which shall be the result of, or identical with, that truth, the power of this greatest knowledge, and the enjoyment of that greatest being and consciousness to which it opens. This must be the final result of the evolution of the conscious being in nature. To arrive then at the whole truth of ourself and spirit, and the knowledge, greatness, bliss of our free and complete being, must be the object of the purification, liberation, and perfection of the buddhi. But it is a common idea that this means not the full possession of nature by the Purusha, but a rejection of nature. We are to get itself by the removal of the action of prakriti. As the buddhi, coming to the knowledge that the sense mind only gives us appearances in which the soul is subject to nature, discovers more real truths behind them. The soul must arrive at this knowledge that the buddhi too, when turned upon nature, can give us only appearances and enlarge the subjection, and must discover behind them the pure truth of the self. The self is something quite other than nature, and the buddhi must purify itself of attachment to and preoccupation with natural things. So only can it discern and separate from them the pure self and spirit. The knowledge of the pure self and spirit is the only real knowledge. Ananda of the pure self and spirit is the only spiritual enjoyment. The consciousness and being of the pure self and spirit are the only real consciousness and being. Action and will must cease, because all action is of the nature. The will to be pure self and spirit means cessation of all will to action. But while the possession of the being, consciousness, delight, power of the self is the condition of perfection, for it is only by knowing and possessing and living in the truth of itself that the soul can become free and perfect, we hold that nature is an eternal action and manifestation of the spirit. Nature is not a devil's trap, a set of misleading appearances created by desire, sense, life, and mental will and intelligence. But these phenomena are hints and indications, and behind all of them is a truth of spirit which exceeds and uses them. We hold that there must be an inherent spiritual gnosis and will, by which the secret spirit in all knows its own truth, wills, manifests, and governs its own being in nature. To arrive at that, at communion with it, or participation in it, must be part of our perfection. The object of the purification of the buddhi will then be to arrive at the possession of our own truth of self-being, but also at the possession of the highest truth of our being in nature. For that purpose, we must first purify the buddhi of all that makes it subject to the sense mind, and that once done, purify it from its own limitations, and convert its inferior mental intelligence and will into the greater action of a spiritual will and knowledge. The movement of the buddhi to exceed the limits of the sense mind is an effort already half accomplished in the human evolution. It is part of the common operation of nature in man. The original action of the thought mind, the intelligence and will in man, is a subject action. It accepts the evidence of the senses, the commands of the life cravings, instincts, desires, emotions, the impulses of the dynamic sense mind, and only tries to give them a more orderly direction and effective success. But the man whose reason and will are led and dominated by the lower mind is an inferior type of human nature, and the part of our conscious being which consents to this domination is the lowest part of our manhood. The higher action of the buddhi is to exceed and control the lower mind, not indeed to get rid of it, but to raise all the action of which it is the first suggestion into the nobler plane of will and intelligence. The impressions of the sense mind are used by a thought which exceeds them, and which arrives at truths they do not give. Ideative truths of thought, truths of philosophy and science, a thinking, discovering, philosophic mind overcomes, rectifies, and dominates the first mind of sense impressions. The impulsive, reactive, sensational mentality, the life cravings, and the mind of emotional desire are taken up by the intelligent will and are overcome, are rectified, and dominated by a greater ethical mind, which discovers and sets over them a law of right impulse, right desire, right emotion, and right action. The receptive, crudely enjoying sensational mentality, the emotional mind and life mind are taken up by the intelligence and are overcome, rectified, and dominated by a deeper, happier, aesthetic mind, which discovers and sets above them a law of true delight and beauty. All these new formations are used by a general power of the intellectual, thinking, and willing man in a soul of governing intellect, imagination, judgment, memory, volition, discerning reason, and ideal feeling, which uses them for knowledge, self-development, experience, discovery, creation, effectuation, aspires, strives, inwardly attains, endeavors to make a higher thing of the life of the soul in nature. The primitive desire soul no longer governs the being. It is still a desire soul, but it is repressed and governed by a higher power, something which has manifested in itself the Godheads of truth, will, good, beauty, and tries to subject life to them. The crude desire soul and mind is trying to convert itself into an ideal soul and mind. And the proportion in which some effect and harmony of this greater consciousness being has been found and enthroned is the measure of our increasing humanity. Pausing near the end of page 668 to be resumed to the chapter's completion in the next reading.